Welcome back to Innovation on Dakota Midday. I'm Kara Hetland, and we are joined now from our Rapid City studios with Dr. Luke Corwin and Dr. Jerwin Reichenbacher. Both are School of Mines physicists who are leaders on the DUNE project. DUNE stands for Deep Underground Neutrino Experiment, and next week, more than 150 scientists from around the world will meet in the Black Hills to collaborate on the project. So, Dr. Corwin, thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
And Dr. Reichenbacher, thank you for being with us as well.
Thank you for having us.
And Dr. Reichenbacher, let's start with you and talk a little bit about your involvement with this project. Give us a little explanation and tutorial about the DUNE project.
So DUNE project, it's named not after the science fiction novel, which is very famous, but it has the same name. So it's it actually stands for Deep Underground Neutrino Experiment. And it is a so-called long baseline neutrino experiment where neutrinos are produced at a particle accelerator in Chicago. And a beam of neutrino particles will be then shot to South Dakota, where deep underground in the Homestead mine, the new Sanford Underground Research Facility in Lead in the Black Hills, are then actually detected there. So that's what we are planning to do. And so far, it's looking very, very promising. If we're going to be approved, that will be the largest particle physics experiment in the United States for the next 10, 20 years.
Okay,
so it's very exciting.
So we're still waiting for federal approval, funding, that kind of thing on this?
Yes, we will get soon, which we assume so-called a critical design review approval, in which case by the end of next year we can start at SURF underground, deep underground, with the excavation for the far detector here in Lead. And a little bit later, also the accelerator facility in Chicago will go ahead and start with making the beam production there.
And Dr. Corwin, what kinds of work has already been done? I know that some detectors have already been constructed, is that right?
Yes. So,
yes. Either one can go. Go ahead.
So, yes, we've built several prototypes at Fermilab. There was one called the 35-ton, which recently completed its run, and it gave us a lot of useful information. There are going to be two new prototypes being built at CERN in Europe, which are basically, these are basically larger and larger scale versions of what we want to build at SURF, which we need to do because the liquid argon detectors are going to be by far the largest detectors of this type that have ever been built. So we need to be prepared for and learn about any unforeseen problems we might encounter on the way.
Define how large is the largest?
The active volume will be a grand total of 40,000 tons, and that will be across four modules, so 10,000 tons of actual active detector volume in each of them, and then several thousand tons around that will serve as shielding against cosmic rays and radiation.
And we're talking football field size, several football fields?
About, I don't remember the exact dimensions off the top of my head, but about the size of a football field each.
Mm-hmm. Each?
Yes.
And there's four?
Right.
Okay. So work is being done on the sides as you're waiting for this. So in reality, timeline for this being up and running.
Well, there's going to be several years. I think, mm-hmm. Of course, the further out into the future you get, there's more and more uncertainties build up. But optimistically, we're hoping to have the first of these four modules running and detecting things somewhere in the very early 2020s.
Okay. Now, talk a little bit, Dr. Reichenbacher, talk a little bit about the collaboration process that's going on and the event that's happening next week at the School of Mines.
Yeah, just to remind people again of the sheer scale, such a large detector with liquid argon, that's cryogenic, a cryogenic liquid, has not been built. So a module that has 10,000 tons is basically unprecedented. So far, we have only had tens of tons prototypes. So that's why we also have to build prototypes detectors somewhere in between in the scale that have basically on a 1,000-ton scale. so that we can then basically be confident enough that we can make the technology work for 10,000 tons of each module. And so a lot of work goes on in simulations, what we need, the requirements to actually, there's a lot of brain that's being divided in many, many subgroups for both the far detector that will be built here, but also for the near detector, which will be in Chicago, and the accelerator facility where the particle beam is being produced. And for each of those, they are organized again in working groups for specific aspects of each of the detectors or the particle generation facility. So we have 175 people actually now coming here to Rapid City. And it's actually a great honor for us here in at the school, South Dakota School of Mines Technology, to be the host for such an important meeting. It's also a critical time in the planning process where a lot of critical decisions are being made about technology, which institution is participating and is responsible for what subsystem. So this is a very well attended meeting. We're up from the last meeting. We have more participants than in the previous collaboration meetings that have been at other locations, mostly in Chicago, where there's the Fermi National Accelerator Lab. And so we hope that here in Rapid City, which we are having a new physics PhD program, that we can establish ourselves here as the so-called far site, where we are the institution closest to the far detector that will be built here for the Dune project.
And how is it collaborating with so many scientists? I'm going to just make an assumption that everybody has their own opinion.
Oh, yes. And particular physicists are very particular people. So, yes, it's surprisingly well organized. But yeah, there are certain individuals that are somewhat different than others. And with so many people on a large collaboration having to work together, the only thing which drives them is really the physics goal, because each single person couldn't do this and achieve it. So you really need the other physicists. And so that's what keeps everyone together. Otherwise, I think particular physicists would be more individualistic people. That would never happen. But it works surprisingly well. But, you know, there can be times where, yeah, people are very upset. But in the end, it's the physics which keeps them all together.
Okay. And the end goal is to discover what with this experiment? Or well, is that still to be defined?
It is still to be defined, but the main goals there are clearly set. So there have been a lot of recent discoveries in the field of neutrino physics. First, that they have actually mass, which was not assumed when they were postulated originally. And then also what we call the so-called oscillation effect, where it can change their flavor while they're traveling. Mm-hmm. And so that has been now, just in the last few years, being really precisely measured. So this is a very exciting new field where a lot of new discoveries have happened and Nobel Prizes have been awarded. And we know that there's one open issue. We don't know actually what the so-called hierarchy is. If what we assume is the lightest neutrino is actually indeed the lightest neutrino or the heaviest neutrino, that we don't know. That's one of the goals. And another goal is also neutrinos and antineutrinos, they're antiparticles. It's not clear if there's an effect which is different for particles and antiparticles. We call that the so-called CP asymmetry. So that's known from the quark sector. Those are the constituents of a nucleus. So in nuclear and particle physics, when you look at regular matter that makes up a nucleus, it's known that quarks show this effect, the so-called CP, charge parity asymmetry. So it's the particle, antiparticle, and when you then mirror this in a spatial mirror, that it's different, that there's this asymmetry. So this is known for quarks, but neutrinos are chargeless. And so in principle, this effect could also happen, but it would be very interesting to see this also for those chargeless particles, neutrinos, if that so-called CP asymmetry actually exists. So that's, I would say, one of the major goals. That is the major goal apart from the hierarchy for this experiment. And Dune will be the most sensitive experiment to study this CP asymmetry, that particles, neutrino particles and antiparticles are compared with each other. And even if we don't find this effect, it would be, as it's the most sensitive experiment that will be running over the next 20 years on this, it will be very interesting to show that that does not happen, as opposed to in the quark sector where we know this is a known effect. So either way, this will be very interesting. And then we have also other physics goals that why we want, that drives mostly why we are underground. So we can look, for example, for the decay of a proton, which makes up a nucleus. And that is also an outstanding problem. And also supernova neutrinos, if in our galaxy nearby a supernova occurs, we can actually measure deep underground those neutrinos there too.
Is there a long-term goal at all about taking how, I mean, right now you're shooting from Chicago basically to Homestake, and I'm wondering, is there a plan to go to CERN and shoot underground, or is that just
so far we are not shooting
it?
That's the
well,
plan.
That's
is
what I mean. The plan is to shoot it, but is there a plan to even, you know, build this out even further down the road?
No, there's no plan. So at CERN we have a test beam, and that's why the next level prototypes will be there at a 1,000 ton scale, where we can expose them to an already existing particle beam, and we can calibrate those prototypes with them.
And this is a cost of how much for this experiment?
It's going to be huge. It's more than half a billion. But that's also depends on the design and what we think, what is necessary. And so the price tag is not fixed yet, but it is a multi-hundred-million-dollar experiment, that is clear.
And it's also a little bit difficult to answer because it depends on whether you measure the cost using American or European accounting rules.
Sure. Okay. And Dr. Corwin, talk a little bit about the programs that are being developed, the educational programs and the PhD programs being developed at School of Mines as a result from this experiment. It's preparing the future scientists, correct?
Well, exactly. I mean, this is something that, an argument that's often made in favor, not just of Dune, but this is true of all of the experiments at SURF, that previous to now, great scientists would have to leave South Dakota to pursue their research elsewhere, but now we can bring them here to do potentially Nobel Prize-winning work right here in the Black Hills, or a mile under the Black Hills. And there are multiple other experiments at SURF that we have different PhD students working on, and that we are training to be the scientists and discoverers of the future. We're talking about neutrinos, dark matter, and many other things. And it's really that lab that has driven the existence of our PhD program, and we're really glad to be a part of it, and it's really an exciting opportunity to be this close to it.
Talk a little bit about what it's like for you both, and I'll let you each take a turn answering, what it's like for you to go down in that lab and the experiments, other experiments that you're both currently working on there.
Well, it's really interesting to go down in that lab because I remember I took my mother on a tour actually of a similar facility at Fermilab, and she's a little claustrophobic, so she was rather afraid to go down there. But once we showed her a picture underground, she's like, it's like a building under there. And it really is. When you actually get down to the lab, it doesn't look like an old gold mine. It looks part of it like an office building. Part of it looks like a nice shiny physics lab. And it's really amazing the level of construction and cleaning and isolation or building that can go on under there. And it doesn't feel like you're underground, so it's really an amazing thing. And other parts, which are not nearly as finished, it really does look like tunnels through the rock. And to realize we're going to have to hollow out this cavern to something that's hundreds of feet long and dozens of feet high is truly astonishing. But it is an amazing experience to know this is all underground, and we managed to get it down there in the first place. The other experiment I'm working on is called NOVA, which is actually not underground in the same way. It's in basically a pit in northern Minnesota, so it doesn't have that same sort of underground capacity. I've been to other underground labs in Japan and in northern Minnesota as well, and it's all the same that these look like physics laboratories. They look like science labs, not like old mines in the most cases.
Dr. Reichenbacher?
It actually feels great. So a few weeks ago, I went underground and took a calibration device that I designed for Deluxe that's using liquid cryogenic xenon for a dark matter search. And I took this device underground, and it just feels right to do this, to actually, usually there's a lot of planning before you run simulations in a computer, but actually that's the first reason I came here, to be here on site, to actually do things. And so that's why it feels great. You take this underground, and it's not just hurry up and wait, so now you actually can do it. And it just feels right to be here down in the Black Hills. And also then when I set it up, then you see, for example, that that was measuring a neutron background from cosmic rays, and you see how much it is actually suppressed compared to surface. And this is actually why we are actually underground, to shield that from cosmic radiation.
And are you able to take students, undergraduate students, and with you when you go?
Yes, it was pretty heavy, so I needed to take a graduate student that I have with me. He's actually from Nepal, and he just started last semester.
Okay. But talk about a little bit about the student experiment with having this underground lab so close to School of Mines.
I think this is a great student experience, and especially for a new PhD program, it's a huge selling point that people actually come here and join our program. So, for example, my other grad student, he's working on the Dune experiment. He spent already time at Fermilab on the 35-ton prototype, but also he helped setting up things underground here in Leed. So, and he knows during his time of his PhD, this is here the facility where things are going on. So this is, and it's a great place to be. So that's why it's actually very attractive, especially when you have a new program that's not established yet, to actually attract good graduate students.
And Dr. Corwin, talk a little bit about, you know, just South Dakotans in general. I mean, we know this lab is there. We know this work is happening. But do we really fully understand the importance and the impact that it could have?
Well, I think the truth is we don't know what impact it's going to have fully. I mean, that's part of the excitement of research, is we don't know what we're going to find. I mean, we could, if we do indeed discover a CP violation, as Dr. Reichenbacher said, in the neutrinos, and it's big enough, that would literally explain why we exist. And so that would be pretty profound. I mean, and I'm not an expert in terms of the economic or societal impacts, but people have studied those. And I think to whatever extent the people of South Dakota and the people listening don't know what the impact is going to be, that's why we're here, is to, you know, our job is not just to discover new science, it's also to share that science with the people who are ultimately paying for it. And, you know, on next Wednesday, there's going to be a public talk here at the School of Mines with Kate Schulberg from Duke University as a prelude to our collaboration meeting, and anyone is invited to come to that. There's a reception beforehand. It's a chance to learn from her what all this is about, and actually meet scientists face-to-face, and, you know, grill us with whatever questions you might have. I won't be able to be there in person, unfortunately, but there's going to be some hands-on experiences, and it's a chance to meet the people who are really building this and talk to them and learn about whatever impact you want from straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak.
And again, that's on the 18th of May. That's next Wednesday, correct?
Right.
And that's open to the public. And how about the rest of the collaboration meetings? Are those closed? Are they open?
They will be closed, but this will be a public outreach talk. And that's on next Wednesday, starting 5:30 for 1 hour. Everyone can come there. Wine and hors d'oeuvre. It's free for the public. And you can mingle for an hour with our faculty here and also the international scientists that come here. A lot of them will show up for this public event. And then Kate Schulberg from Duke will give her a presentation. And also then there will be afterwards a question and answering session where you can in person also ask a scientist. And it will be very casual, so I will again invite people to feel free to come. And you can mingle with scientists, and it's a very hands-on approach to get yourself familiarized with the subject, because the subject itself is not as simple. So talking to people and having scientists explaining to you in person, that's a great opportunity. So again, please feel free to come. That's a great opportunity. And for Rapid City, to host in the following 4 days, so from Thursday through Sunday, the Dune collaboration meeting is actually a great honor for a place like the South Dakota School of Mines of Technology.
Okay, I want to thank you both for taking time and coming on the program today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.